Welcome to the Mini PC Show. This is the show where we talk about Raspberry Pi type size computers. We've got, we talk about some HTPC stuff too, Android boxes, little things. Big talk, little tech, right? So tonight we have a full cast of characters. We've got Dor and Brian. Brian, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic today, Eric. Thank you for asking, my friend.
Brian the Cable Guy.
Ask the Cable Guy. I've had a lot of people ask me a lot of questions regarding the cable from you name it. So that name kind of stuck. Hey, it's Brian the Cable Guy.
Yeah, that's cool.
So when they say fiber, does that mean it's going to help me go to the bathroom?
But I'm here all week, guys. Try the veal; it's best in town.
Tip your waitress.
So, how are you doing, Eric? Feels like it's been a while, but we just talked last week.
Oh, I'm going crazy, man! Crazy.
Crazy's good, though, right?
Yeah. There's just a lot going on right now. It's good things, yes. It's good. Crazy good. But then there's other things that I wish there wasn't so much going on, so that I could do other things. Sometimes you need two extra days of the week, maybe four or five extra hours in each of those days, and then maybe a whole extra body to cover every place. I don't know. Maybe I just need to
make. Well, here's just a little tip: if you cryogenically freeze yourself and then have yourself unfrozen in about a million years, we're going to have about 25 or 26 hours in the day, so you'll get two extra hours.
That would help. That would help. But then all the stuff that I want to do now, you guys aren't going to wait for me. So that ain't going to be no fun then.
Well, no. You're a government employee. When they unfreeze you, all your work will be sitting there waiting for you because nobody else is going to do it.
Yeah, you got that right. Yeah, so that's another thing too. I got an election coming up, so I took out my petitions. I haven't went door to door yet getting them signed, but that's coming up here soon too. Fun stuff.
So I would ask you, are you going to vote for Beavis or Butthead? But we're not going to go there. I have a really quick announcement that I have to make, because if I don't make it now, it's going to be too late. Ohio Linux Fest is October 7th and 8th. Columbus, Ohio, in the Hyatt, right outside the Greater Columbus Convention Center. If you've seen any of my talks at OLF in the last couple of years, I always try to give stuff away. Last year, thanks to Joe Heck, I was able to give away at least, I would say, 20 mugs. I gave away some books. I gave away some shirts. I gave away some light hardware, I'll say, just because. I have to give back to people one way or another, and I'm not above bribing people to come to my talk. Now, with that said, this year is going to be a little bit different at Ohio Linux Fest, and that's because, thanks to Joe Heck, I'm going to OLF not only as a speaker, but I'm going as a media representative, which means we're going to get a table, a booth. Our table is going to be right next to the free coffee, aka we're going to have a lot of foot traffic. Two, we're going to have power right at our booth, because you know me and Joe are going to use something, or we're going to design something to take over the world because we have power there. But Joe is literally going to bring well over, I'm going to guess, $200 to $300 worth of stuff to give away. Mugs, stickers, paraphernalia, all kinds of paraphernalia. I mean, all kinds of paraphernalia. In support of his podcast, the SBC and VPS show over on codeforsale.com. I'm going to also give away stuff. I'm going to basically bring nearly every mini computer of every form factor that I own. And my goal is to at least give some of it away. I don't know which ones. I don't know how many. It's going to be impromptu is what I'm going to say. Also, Richard Hughes is going to come up. I'm honestly going to give a conservative number. He's going to come with like between 8 and 12 Raspberry Pi Zeros to give away. The only question is he going to give them away using Stargate SG-1 trivia? Or is it going to be like Tilt's podcast trivia? We don't know yet. But I encourage everyone, anywhere remotely close to that area on October 6th, 7th, or 8th, because I'm going to be there on Thursday, go to the conference, ping me, shoot me an email, Google Plus post me, Twitter me, whatever. Let me know you're going to be there. I'll buy you a drink. I don't care who you are, because the whole point of these conferences are to meet people and to talk to people. The conferences and the talk and the sessions are almost, that's the excuse you give to the wife. That's the excuse you give to your work while you're going to these things, but you really go to meet the people. Also, Podnuts is basically going to be sponsoring all of the produced audio. Podnuts, in conjunction with SBC and VPS Show, we're going to assist with the production of all their audio for all their talks. So Joe and I are going to be quite busy, but it's going to be quite rewarding with a really good payoff. Joe now, see, I always call Eric the booker behind the scenes, and not to his face all the time, because he's the guy I trust to book people for shows. If Eric's the booker, well, then Joe now is going to be the broker, because he's going to be the guy who can finalize closed deals kind of thing. Because I've tried to sponsor conferences in the past where it's almost like, get away from me, I'm too busy scheduling the conference, I don't have time to talk to you type mentality, where Joe closed the deal literally in a couple of hours, it seems like. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I really beg people, if you can make it, and please let me know. Oh, and you get free stuff, and it's a free conference to attend. I mean, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, and that's one of the many things that I wish I could be there for. I'm just, as you were talking again, I'm looking at my calendar, trying to figure out how to make this work, to even just get out there at all. But
well, if the people don't really know you well, you could always find someone you trust and say, hey, do me a favor. On this night, I need you to tell people your name is Eric.
Yeah.
And well, I could, and just shake their hands and just tell them, okay, you're going to do your best. Because, you know, they'll never
I could just mail you my name badge and you could pick out my surrogate while you're there. Because, you know, just find somebody, you know, looks good, of course, fit,
no,
fit
the other way around.
Looks like a manager of Applebee's.
Around. No, the other way around. You leave the surrogate there to meet those people while you come out to the conference.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't work. That's not going to work. I've got Chain Gang that I do. I have to do Friday night. Saturday, I've got the Rock River Development Authority annual dinner, which happens to be hosted at my house. That's the 8th. It's not looking good, man. So yeah.
Well, look. Just like Monty Python always said, always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah, no, that's good.
There'll always be another conference, and who knows, Eric? Next year there could be a conference even really close to your hometown.
Yeah, Chicago's not really close, but you never know.
It's definitely closer.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. I would, I could have a conference here if people would want bad Wi-Fi or whatever.
There's no airport close to you, Eric.
Yes, there is.
There ain't, like 2 hours away.
There's an airport. 8 minutes from my house.
An airport that can handle planes that carry more than 15
the
people.
The president flew in there. It's got one of the largest runways in Illinois. It's
not buying it, Eric. I'm not buying it.
It's got the same size runways as Midway Airport in Chicago.
I'm not buying it, Eric. Okay, Eric.
My name is Paul, and that's between y'all. It sounds like a fantastic time.
Yeah, come see my airport.
Okay, here's the first link I have to bring to the show. Line 270 on the docks. And the main reason I'm bringing this is because everybody on this show has to give this a try. This is brand new, literally just announced, I believe, yesterday. The Raspberry Pi Foundation, basically, the impression I got was they literally hired coders. They hired Cube Monkeys to sit down and code stuff for them. And some of the things that came out of that endeavor is a customized desktop specifically for the Raspberry Pi, aka optimized software. For all these lower powered devices, optimized software makes it or breaks it. If you don't have optimized software, you're not going to have a good experience. That means you're always going to have to compromise in order to get done what you want to get done. So now with a totally customized desktop, and I believe they have a customized browser as well in with this, it should make your Raspberry Pi experience even better, is what I want to say. Because it isn't snappy. It's not an i7 with 32 gigs of RAM. You know what I mean? It's an ARM quad-core mini computer. It should be snappier. I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but I am going to try it. And I expect good things.
So this is Pixel? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And unfortunately, apparently this time of year, it was written in the Mayan calendars in the year 2016, in between September and November, we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff called Pixel.
Oh, that's funny.
And I hate it. But yeah, so this should be available right now to download as the default desktop in all Raspbian distributions from official distribution sources. So even if you didn't know it existed and you went on Wednesday, September 28th and clicked download for Raspbian, you got this new desktop called Pixel.
And you have not downloaded it yet?
No, I did not see this link until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon today. Came home, cooked dinner, helped one kid with homework, helped another kid set up his computer down here, and then spend 30 minutes on Voxer, Hangouts, and everything else, chatting with people.
Okay, so when I go to the downloads page, it still comes up Noobs or Raspbian.
Yeah.
And I just download Raspbian, and the GUI is now Pixel in Raspbian.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And if you download Noobs and you pick Raspbian, you'll get the new Pixel desktop.
Oh, okay.
Now, I hope the people at PiTop OS, the laptop form factor, Raspberry Pi powered laptop, I really hope they update their images and their sources, because I've been waiting since April for the base/battery for my PiTop. Last week on Friday, I got two of them.
Wow.
So now I have a backup base, and I have a fully functioning base. I plugged it up. Everything's working as perfectly as advertised. And tomorrow I should be getting in the mail from, I believe, Randy sent me an email. He actually is not far physically from me. He's maybe 3 hours away. But he is USPSing me the original Atrix laptop that's compatible with the Raspberry Pi Zero, Raspberry Pi 1, to where you can hook it up and you have everything working. If you want to use a Raspberry Pi 2 or Raspberry Pi 3 or Odroid, you need an external power source because of the amount of power it draws. So now I'm going to have two laptop form factor Pi-powered devices to bring to Ohio and show people, kind of stuff.
What screen size are those? And
hopefully 10-inch, I believe.
Very nice.
Should be good. And tomorrow is when I'm literally ripping my Raspberry Pi 3 out, taking it to work, plugging it up to a second monitor. By law, I get 2 15-minute breaks and a half an hour break. One of those 15-minute breaks, I'm going to download, flash the SD card, boot it up right there, see what it's like.
So those Atrix docks, they got to be out there for fairly cheap and kind of easy to find, aren't they?
It matters what you call fairly cheap, and it matters what you call easy to find. Because the dirty secret is, there's, I think, three versions of the dock. Two of the versions of the dock have DRM hardware baked into the HDMI port, so they won't work for these Pi-type computers.
I think we talked about that before, didn't we? Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's only one type. You can find them on eBay for about $100.
Mm.
So they're not, like, dirt cheap, but they're not, crazy expensive either.
Okay.
So yeah, I encourage everyone, download your new Raspbian image, check out Pixel, go to the Google Plus group, tell people what you think about it, what your experience with it. Hopefully I'll have my experience done tomorrow.
Yeah, this desktop looks pretty nice. I mean, from the screenshots that they have of the website here, it definitely looks compelling to check it out.
Yeah, and I mean, there was really nothing on the Raspberry Pi that I would say was ridiculously slow or unusably slow, but I can definitely believe having a customized desktop desktop environment would make it much more usable. So yeah, that's really good. Now we have literally 80 other links to pick from for this show.
Well, I was wondering if we could talk about the one right above this one at 269, where that you can turn a Pi Zero into a dongle computer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That seemed to get talked about quite a bit yesterday, everywhere all of a sudden.
Oh, okay. Well, it was showcased on Lifehacker, which might have something to do with it, I'm going to say, maybe. I will encourage people, if you just search for N-O-D-E, I believe it's actually N space O space D space E, all caps, Node, has a channel on YouTube. All of their preview images look the same, black background with like CAD drawings of what they're going to talk about. What this project is, I can tell you now, unbelievably nifty, and I never use the word nifty. This guy's really smart. He almost over-documents how to do it, too, which I really appreciate because I need that kind of hand-holding. You take a Raspberry Pi, you take a full-size USB port, you solder four cables to it, and what it gives you the ability to do is, like a portable thumb drive, plug this up to a laptop or desktop computer. Then from the laptop or desktop computer, you can SSH into the Raspberry Pi Zero as if it's a full networked computer.
Nice.
This and Richard Hughes, the guy buying Raspberry Pi Zeros like it's free cheese, admitted to me, you know, there isn't much you can do with the Raspberry Pi Zero. They're only a single core computer. Then I showed him this video and he was like, holy crap. Okay, wait. Now this makes me rethink of what I can do with one of these things. It isn't difficult at all. You literally only have to modify, I believe, two files. It's config.txt, and I believe it's boot.ini, possibly, to change the boot sequence to make the Ethernet come in over the USB. You wire it so the power comes in over the USB. So it's just one plug you got to plug up. I personally think this is pretty ingenious, and you really only have to solder minimum four wires, maximum eight, because you might have to solder them to the USB side. But this looks so simple. I'm going to say, this looks so simple, even a dummy like me could actually probably pull this off and not burn the house down.
So you're SSHing into the Ethernet of going over USB, not Wi-Fi or nothing like that then. Because it doesn't have it.
Virtual Ethernet over USB.
Virtual Ethernet using the laptop or desktop's Ethernet, real Ethernet. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to lie. It's a little bit confusing. And by a little bit confusing, it's pretty confusing. But you can have it boot up. You can SSH into it. You can SSHX into it. And to explain SSHX sessions, it's a slight bit difficult, but I'll say it like this, Eric. My computer, your computer. Hypothetically, I open up my Firefox. I have my interface. I open up your Firefox. We have your interface. From my computer, if I SSH X session from my computer into your computer, I then type Firefox. I have your Firefox GUI pop up in front of me exactly as you see it. And all the processing to load that is on your computer. So you can have what looks like native applications running on your laptop or desktop when in actuality they're running in a portable mode on that Raspberry Pi Zero. This is just cool. And this guy's channel is chock full of this type of... I really want to use the original definition of the word hacking.
Yeah, hackery, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
this guy has great little hackery things you can do on his channel, and they are obsessively documented, people. I cannot tell you enough. That's the real reason why I pinged this one, was because he tells you step by step by step by step exactly how to do it.
Wow.
Just good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is amazing. That's one of the reasons why I love this show. This is freaking amazing. I love it.
Well, and I ain't gonna lie, Brian, part of the reason I wanted to do this show was to give me a excuse to spend my days looking for this kind of stuff, because I would be doing it anyway. But even more now, because I talked about it on the show, I have to document it. So now I have my quote-unquote search engine, where I just, you know, go into Google, search podnuts.com, Raspberry Pi, whatever, and I can find it in a couple months if I find the time to do this.
You've got your knowledge base there.
Yeah. I offloaded all higher brain functions down to the internet. Let me think. Okay, now there's one I wanted to mention. I'm not going to put the link to the notes for this because it's another one of those questionably legal things we talked about in Cody.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We used tvfusion.ag. We literally get something like 10 or 12 or whatever different plugins. Four of the plugins are showcased where we can easily go into it and search. But I had a guy, and I can't find the email anymore. So I feel like a complete mixture of water and vinegar because I can't remember who it was who sent it to me. But he sent me a link saying, Dor, I heard you talk about that. I tried that in the past. I didn't like it as much as I like this. And it's called Kodi Master Version 3. I have my Odroid C2 upstairs. I think of that as my production machine. I'm not going to do any development or testing on the production machine because that will mess up the wife and the kids' TV viewing experience. So I have my Odroid C1 not being used. I could use that as my beta testing device and give this a try. I just haven't had time to try it yet. But I do want to because the TV Fusion's HTPC experience, it works. It just isn't great. It's good. It works when it wants to. Like, for instance, I watched Mazes and Monsters the other night, and I'm hoping neither of you guys even ever heard of that
movie. I've never heard of it.
No.
Okay. Nobody I know has, and I love it, but I don't know where I heard it from. It's a Tom Hanks movie from 1982. It's his very first movie, where it's basically like, we used to have Stranger Danger, and people said playing D&D is the work of the devil. This is a gross exaggeration of what happens when you play Dungeons and Dragons. Instead, they call it Mazes and Monsters because they didn't want to get sued. Where a guy, Tom Hanks, goes too deep into the game. He accidentally, purposely, stabs somebody and kills them. And then he almost jumps off the top of the World Trade Centers because they used to be standing back in 1982. So I watched that the other night on my TV Fusion Kodi experience, and it worked. You know, it worked decent, but I want to give this one a try, see how this one compares. And I'll report back, maybe not next week because it's going to be so close to the fest, but I will report back when I try this on how good, bad this compares to the other experience. The guy emailed me swore by it, so I got to believe it's better.
Yeah, I've never strayed away too much.
Now that I got working on the Fire Stick, but now little hardware news. I got this in the mail, which was the OTT TV box that has like a honeycomb finish on the top of it. Has a little LED light inside of it on a little like a little ring around the top of it, and it's a
This one looked physically exactly like one of the ones that Brian brought
right
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
physically. It is. It's got to be the same case. This is by Great Ever, which is I know, Brian. I think you were going to buy something that was made by them, anyway. So I wanted to give a quick review. This one has 2 gigs of RAM. It's got Android 6 in it. The one I have is the T95Z Plus, and it's got Kodi Media Center running on it. Mm-hmm. Which works pretty good. This one's got a 64-bit CPU 4-core processor. They say it does 4K. The TV I've got running on is a 720p, so I'm not too worried about that. But I'll tell you, the one add-on that I really am enjoying on there is something called Modbro, M-O-D-B-R-O. And basically, it gives live streams of channels. So for cord cutters who have cut the cord and are running straight off of internet only, this almost gives you your TV back going channel to channel to channel. You're watching commercials, and like if I tune into HGTV on it, I'm watching Canadian commercials. But you've got all these British channels and European channels and everything, not just the American ones. And toilet paper commercials are so much different in the other countries. The names of their toilet paper, it's just remarkable that there's not Charmin and Scott like there is here.
So, dare I ask, what do they call it?
It's like different names of flowers, mostly. Like Fuchsia, I think, was one of them. Yeah, I don't know. But that one was nice. That's a nice add-on. We could not. I tried to watch some NFL on it last Sunday. I tried to get the Arizona Cardinals game. I could not find a stream for that because our local Fox station wasn't broadcasting that game. It was broadcasting a different game. But it's nice if you're nostalgic and you want the cable or satellite type TV experience where you get to see all the commercials and you just flip from channel to channel without being a fully a la carte or fully on demand kind of experience. Mod Bro brings that back for you. Or Mob Dro, MOBDRO.
Now, from your experience, I mean, given you're pretty tech savvy and you know your way around pretty good, how would you compare this to someone not knowing anything about computers, taking something like this and setting them up, connecting it to their TV? Do you think they'd be able to pull that off?
I think they could. Once you get into the Kodi part, then you're just like the TVaddons.au. So that's just a subset of the UI. So if you're a little, you could get by without ever going in there and getting a lot of content for your television, which, you know, I would recommend for people. But like my wife, I was coming down here to do the podcast, and she's like, the TV's on something, I don't know what it was, and it was on Kodi. So I'm like, well, you know, just hit your home button, and the remote control has a home button. So then it took it back to the to the home screen, which had the bigger, more tile type interface kind of thing. So I think, but Kodi itself, I think, is still a little overwhelming for people. You know, the user interface is just not quite something you'd see on a television too much.
So here's my two quick questions, Derek. One, right now this says $78.99. Did you get this on Amazon Review Trader at a discount?
I did.
Can I ask how much?
$35.
Ooh, I see that. That's a good price.
Yeah, it is.
Two, did it come with a remote or a controller of any kind?
It came with a remote.
Oh, because in the pictures, I don't see anything. That's why I specifically asked for it. Okay, so then the question is, how's the experience on the controller? Is it like a fly mouse where you point it in the air and you see a mouse pointer go around? Or do you have like up, down, left, and right?
There's a button that switches that on and off. So you can have it left, up, down, left, and right with a center select button. Or if you press there's a mouse button kind of thing where then you are moving around a cursor.
Gotcha.
And so on top of that remote that I'm using, I've also got the Amazon Fire controller, gamepad controller, hooked up via Bluetooth to it. Paired up just fine, no problems at all. So I can play games and also navigate the UI just fine with that. And then I've also got that little a little wireless keyboard with a touchpad on it. And that one's a 2.4 gigahertz USB dongle interface. That works great with it too, no problems at all. So I have three ways of possibly interfacing with the box. And I would say overall, I would say the Amazon Fire controller is probably the best, most comfortable, most versatile way to interface with it.
I had the great ever H96 Pro TV box, and I believe it has the same processor as yours does, Eric. And I thought the setup was pretty simple. I have the same keyboard, mouse, trackpad that I use at the kitchen table. So I got this for my kitchen because I didn't have anything in my kitchen to use. I actually had the Raspberry Pi 2, which I thought was a little bit, it was great with Kodi, but when I tried to stream live TV with Kodi, it was a little choppy. The performance I really didn't care for too much. So,
hey, did you have it hooked up wirelessly?
I didn't. No,
Oh, you had it hardwired.
Yeah, hardwired. No,
and it was choppy.
It was,
wow.
Yeah. But it was only choppy on the live TV. If I streamed content from a drive or local, it was perfect.
Well, I'm going to tell you people right now, just in case you haven't picked up on this, if it's choppy and he has it hardwired, you bet your butt it ain't his network, okay? This is Ask the Cable Guy we're talking to, not the pizza delivery guy, okay? So that really honestly speaks volumes to me. That tells me how the box itself is not the weakest link in this chain. It's the provider that you're going to for.
Absolutely. I would have to say my live streaming was choppy as well. Mine is over Wi-Fi. I don't have Ethernet ran to the bedroom where I've got that hooked up at. And I was surprised, and maybe your box is the same, but it may have the same board in there, but all of the different connectors. I mean, there's even AV out on this box.
Yeah.
Just amazing amounts of connectors all the way around the whole thing.
Yeah, that looks pretty nice. The H96 Pro TV box that I have, it streams very wonderfully live TV using the
the Ethernet.
The Prime. Yeah, using the Ethernet on the Prime service that I have with the cable card, the video capturing network card. So I just take the live TV from my cable card and I pump that through my network. And so the Raspberry Pi was kind of chopping up, and it wasn't really streaming it that well. But the great Everbox, the H96 box, was perfect. It was good enough for me to hand the keyboard to my wife and say, "Here, you can watch TV," or take the remote, you can watch television that way. And she seemed to work with it okay. I found out though that I have a better experience with the box without using the standard interface. And just loading up a launcher from the Play Store with a mouse and a keyboard. I just get a better experience that way.
So I haven't put a different launcher on it. I've been pretty happy with the one. Now does your launcher on yours, the original one, if you remember it before you changed it, did it have a large yellow box on the left that said like Kodi Media Center?
And it then did. Some yeah. Other okay. It was great. Yeah, I thought the launcher was great. If he didn't have if he didn't have a trackback keyboard,
yeah,
or a mouse type of remote like Dor described, if he just had a standard IR remote, the launcher that came with it was great. I mean, you can get around pretty good. But when I first experienced the first game that I downloaded, I did the same thing with a game controller. I was like, this is pretty awesome. Let me just load a bunch of stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I just loaded all kinds of live wallpapers, just all kinds of apps from the Play Store. And it took everything.
Yeah.
So by default, you have the Google Play App Store and Kodi installed right out of the box.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, see, now that to me can help, how can I say this, less educated users. Because honestly, no matter how much we don't promote ourselves, we're at least kind of experienced in this arena. But I would have to believe, even for the undereducated person, connecting it, hooking it up the first time, seeing the Google Play icon with any Android experience tells them, well, I can just go on here and search for Netflix, right? And, they have that mm-hmm. part covered. And then with Kodi, if the interface is anything like they're showing on the last screenshot in Amazon, how on the left you have movies, TV, music, add-on, pictures, video, weather. At least it tries to handhold them through some content filtering and finding. Mm-hmm.
No, I fully agree with you, Dor, and it didn't take long for the kids to pick up the keyboard and navigate their way through YouTube and some of the games themselves without me instructing them, so they were very familiar with the user interface.
Yeah, and anybody who... I think Brian and I are probably both in the same boat, but I think it was a year ago I bought my last Android TV box, and they've come a long way in a year. It's not the thing it was a year ago. It's much better.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Night and day difference.
Mm-hmm.
I was taken back. Hey, I was having a conversation with someone on Google Plus, and they were kind of knocking down the Android TV box, just taking a tablet Android and, slapping it on the big screen TV, and how useless that was compared to Android TV you get with NVIDIA Shield TV. And it's personal preference, because the NVIDIA Shield, you get a lean back experience with the remote or the game controller. And whereas with a tablet version Android TV box, you don't really have that lean back experience with it. So, but you still, there's some things, there's caveats to it, you know?
Right. Well, I'll say this. I don't know if you guys heard about Andromeda, whatever it's called, the rumored Pixel 3 device, which is going to be a laptop 2-in-1 form factor with Chrome OS and Android unified in a single operating system coming out from Google. But the reason why I don't think that's going to be at all successful in any piece of hardware is the same reason why I think, in actuality, Android TV itself has near zero hope of being successful. And I'm going to use the word that Android people think is evil: fragmentation. When they talk about the difference between a HTC and a Samsung and a Motorola, they try to say that's fragmentation. That's not fragmentation. That's all different shades of the same color. It's still a phone. It's still a mobile processor. It still has about the same aspect ratio, and it still has the same about screen size. Resolutions can be different, but there's not that much differences. When you start to blow it up into larger devices like tablets and then up to TV and then into 2-in-1 interfaces, application developers have to specifically develop for that platform or else you cannot load the application. And then you have certain content creators that say, I don't care if you watch my content on a phone. I don't care if you watch my content on a tablet, but you will not watch my content on Android TV, because that means you're going around and not paying your this fee or that fee through this service to get my kickbacks, kind of thing. Which is why sometimes the tablet experience for media and content is freer. I'm not going to say it's a better interface, because I agree with you, Brian. The laid-back Android TV experience in the operating system is far superior than putting a tablet interface on a TV. But sometimes the content you want is not available on that OS.
Right.
So
I think Google TV felt those pains that you're talking about.
Right. And this is where I hate to say it. Convenience trumps legality. That's why on these HTPCs, Kodi is successful. In fact, it's so successful, the EU, I believe it was last week, outright outlawed people selling devices with pre-configured Kodi plugins and add-ons installed on them because it encouraged piracy too much.
I'm going to go as far as to say, to piggyback on what you're saying, Dor, is that the Kodi is so successful, it is the number one driving force on boxes like these. So if they didn't have Kodi on there, then I don't think they would be seeing the sales that they're seeing. You know, and I can't really bring up actual numbers, but I'm gonna throw that out there. It's just because it's so well known and it's so versatile.
Kodi's the buzzword. I was at somebody's house a couple days ago, and I'm like, oh, you got an Amazon Fire Stick? They got the box just sitting there. They're like, yeah, that's got everything on it. You know, it's been, you know, we bought it off our friend for $65. I'm like, okay. Like, yeah, we don't have internet for it yet, though, so we just got to wait to get the internet. And I'm like, why would you? That's kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but I don't know. I guess if there's a fear that they're going to be outlawed or I don't know why, or they didn't think they could ever get a Fire Stick with Kodi on it some other way. I'm like, well, that's cool. Yeah, I had that done in about 15 minutes at home. But, hopefully you get the internet. So.
Well, Eric, if they don't even have the internet, do you think they would be able to install it and configure it themselves?
Yeah, that's true. That would be hard. That'd be hard to do, but...
Right. Now, and I will tell people, I might have been hijacked. I might have took the bait on the clickbait and just read the headline and believe it. But there will be a link in the notes to a Torrent Freak article. Has the EU just outlawed fully loaded Kodi boxes? Where it looks like they go through the complete breakdown of what didn't happen. But I believe at least that's what I heard or read on headlines.
Oh, hey, and just a disclaimer on that great ever T95Z Plus TV box that's for sale on Amazon. podnuts.com/Amazon. The LED is not as described. It is not a multicolored swirling piece of beauty like that. It is, it goes from green to teal to blue, and it just flickers one color to the next color to the next color. There's an LED button on the remote, which I cannot get to do anything, because sometimes you'd like to just not have that light on, you know, when you're watching something. And it does have a clock face on it, too. It's got, which automatically sets the time for the clock on it with the internet time when it does its download of that when you set it up. So you don't have a flashing 12 automatically right out of the box. That's kind of nice. Oh, and speaking
of clocks. Yeah, I was wondering about that. Oh, yeah.
Speaking of clocks. So Brian had this fascination with LED numbers that show up inside of wood. And he showed me a really cool picture of a hallway where he went to, where there's a scrolling LED sign that moved down the hallway. And it was a wooden wall that was like panels of wood, and they all looked the same. But then some of them had numbers and letters and stuff superimposed onto them from behind, supposedly, or I guess. So we were looking, and there's these little clocks. That's basically it looks like a block of wood, and then magically these the numbers just appear on the wood for the time and stuff. So it once again ART, which is short for Amazon Review Trader. We should just say ART from now on, I guess, but make it easier. ART had one, so I reviewed it for $6, and I did attempt to take it apart, Brian, because I needed to know for you, because Brian's like, I want to know how these work. So I got my spudger out and I started prying it apart, and the plastic was just breaking on me. And I'm like, man, my wife really likes this thing. I don't want to destroy it. So I chickened out. I had it probably a quarter of the way removed, but it was glued in too well. I just could not get past it, and I was starting to mess. I chunked off a couple pieces of the black plastic holding it in, and I was kind of marring up the wood surface a little bit. So I had to fall back and regroup with it. So I still don't know your answer for you.
That's all right. I did a little digging, actually. It turns out that it was a design company based out of Boston. I'm trying to look for the name of it right now. I'm coming up. Empty, but the material's called veneer.
It's
a veneer material, and they work magic with it. I mean, just by touching it, it feels like actual hardwood. But they use this veneer material, and then underneath it, they have this like an LED ticker that just streams across the whole entire corridor. But you can do a lot of other things with it too. They really make it really, really wonderful. But I'm trying to find out.
What you're saying, Brian, is you can take a Raspberry Pi Zero.
Yes.
At least semi-bright LED clock and some wood veneer and customize yourself a, I don't even know what to call it. Like they call magic mirrors, a mirror with a screen behind it where you can then read it. And I guess I would call this a magic wood clock.
Magic box. So no, you hit it right on the head, and you can make this thing pretty much do anything you want.
This clock came with, it's got a prox sensor in it, so it'll be just a random piece of wood sitting on your desk until you touch it. And you can set it up this way. You can set it up to display all the time, but it can just be sitting there, I wonder what that piece of wood is. Somebody touches it, and then the display comes up. It also saves the battery life that way too. So you don't really need to display in the time until you want to know what time it is.
Or we could get like kids in the garage to put these things together, but we could also solder on a little Wi-Fi module, and we can have it Wi-Fi pineapple all the local networks and then send all that information home so we can start our own NSA.
What's the point of the veneer and the LEDs then? On that one.
just so people don't know it. So we just sell them these clocks on Etsy. And they have no idea they're actually turning into data gathering tools that then we can gather the data and we can sell it to the government for a price.
You know, you're hitting on something there, Dor, too. Because so what if you don't have three AA batteries in this, and it also came with two like watch batteries that keep its memory settings. And it also has a thermometer in it too. But I increasingly worry about this door because all of these little doodads and gizmos and stuff that I buy, most of them are powered by USB. And I just wonder how easy it would be for them to put a little circuit in there if I'm powering it off of a USB for my computer, for them just to be, you know, phoning home or doing anything.
Well, Stuxnet?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I believe it was in Chicago, okay? There was a mall where they had charging stations where you could walk up and plug your phone up.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody would bother you, and you could charge your phone up, and you could stand there if you want until your phone's completely charged. Well, the dirty secret was inside of that booth was not just at the other end was power, but it was a computer that would attempt to mount the device it was connected to and suck data off. I believe it was Chicago where they found this like 6 or 8 months ago. So like when I went to the hospital for my mother-in-law in their lobby area, they had a mysterious piece of plastic. And then outside of the plastic, there was like 7 cords hanging out the bottom so you could charge your phone. And I just laughed.
I've never trusted those.
No. Yeah.
Every conference I go to, they've got them. This charging station sponsored by blah, blah, blah. No. Yeah. But there's so many. It's so easy to give it away. And I'm worried about that with all the stuff that I buy from China. It comes in all the time. But I don't know. What do I get to hide?
No.
I don't know. There was a link I wanted to talk about, and I want to let it load real quick so I can be sure. Because honestly, we have so many links. These names just go all around, and we keep losing them. Well, Brian, this one thing you brought in the notes was the modular kangaroo notebook.
Yeah, I forgot all about that one. Thanks, Dor.
No problem.
So I stumbled upon this while I was looking for something else. A friend of mine asked me, he says, yeah, I'm looking for a mini PC that's under $100 and that runs Windows. I said, well, you know, I don't know if you're going to get good performance or not under $100, but I'm sure we can find you something. And I thought about the Kangaroo. The Kangaroo is not under $100, but it does meet that $100 price point, and it's a pretty decent spec'd PC. But aside from that, they do have this Kangaroo notebook that I'm not too sure when it's hitting the market.
Mid-October, it says.
Oh, okay. But it does look pretty sweet. I mean, it looks like a regular laptop that you would slide the mini PC Kangaroo box into where the kind of like a PCMCI card on the side there. Mm-hmm. Right, where you kind of rest your palms to type, and it looks so low profile that it doesn't get in the way, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I would hope that what is the majority of that space taken up in the base is a battery, because the hardware in the mini computer, it almost looks like the size of a portable phone charger. It's not really that big. 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of internal storage, running an Intel Z8350 Cherry Trail computer. The laptop itself is 11.6 inches, so that's not really teeny. You know, that has a okay keyboard on it. So if the most of that area in the base is battery, I could see this thing literally running for easy, like 10, 12 hours off of one charge. I'll say, unfortunately, the laptop part itself is going to at least start out at launch, they're thinking a price of $300.
Right.
If they can bring that price down under $200, I could see people picking this thing up and really enjoying it.
No, I agree. I fully agree with you, and I'd like to see what this looks like after the product's life cycle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say Kangaroo does seem to be active. They have put out more than a couple pieces of hardware in the last year. I really hope somewhere at least they're catching on a little bit, because it looks like they're trying to do good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What in the subtext here, it says comprises of a laptop shell and 2 mini PC modules. So I'm trying to figure out what they mean by 2. It says It's a modular laptop that comes with too many PC modules. You swap out your module.
So it's like Voltron?
So I think it's like two different users, maybe, where instead of just logging in and out of a user account, you just log it. You swap in and out a different mini PC in the laptop itself, possibly. Or you could have a home and work one, I guess.
Or maybe you could load one up and have half power, or load both of them up and have 4 total gigs of RAM, 64 total gigs of storage. I don't know.
Yeah, the article doesn't really go into detail about that.
And there is a link. This is why I like this site, Brian, techtree.com, mm-hmm. because literally 4 words into the article, InFocus unveils modular Kangaroo notebook, and Kangaroo notebook is a hyperlink going out directly to the kangaroo.cc site. Most scummy websites would have this link at the very bottom of the article, forcing you to page down through everything before you get to this kind of thing. So the actual press release might go into details about that, but I don't see on the article a good description.
And the article says that once you pull those mini PCs out, they're not standalone. Like, you can't just take that and throw that into a monitor or HDMI out, or, you know, hook up a mouse and keyboard to it either. That's kind of surprising. There must be a specific use case for this that they're hitting that I just don't understand yet.
Yeah, the article says the Kangaroo Mini PC computing modules create separate PC experiences that are entirely independent from each other, but delivered in a one lightweight HD laptop dock. 2 PCs, total privacy, small footprint. What are they referring to?
I'm going to throw this out there and say possibly they're going to come out with a desktop version where you can take this same module and shove it in
there. Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, because if it's only available to be used on this notebook, then what's the point of ever taking it out?
Yeah, can you imagine that? So like a 30-inch size HD screen, sliding that mini PC right into the side there, getting your wireless laptop, a wireless mouse and keyboard, just going to town. When you're done, take that out, slide it in your clamshell device, and head on the road.
I guess the only thing I could think of, Dor, for what you're saying is possibly you got 2 kids, say twins, and they're both 8, and you don't want to buy them both a laptop each. So you buy them this, and then they have to take turns.
I'm pretty sure the kids would fist fight over whose turn.
But then Brian comes along and says, "Hey, here's a 30-inch monitor. You can also slide it into the side of that when your sister's using the laptop, so you can watch YouTube in a big screen." I don't know.
I don't know, but I really do. This is the kind of company I wish nothing but success, because this is the kind of modularity I could see businesses and enterprises really jumping on, because to be very honest, unless you're running a huge Microsoft project file, unless you're doing crazy in-depth Visio diagrams, unless you're running administrative type software, or you're working on a 350 gig SQL Server database, for most office needs, you don't need 16 gigs of RAM and an i7 processor. But this is the kind of modularity where you can tell the person, take this unit home as a desktop. Take this unit as your laptop. Now here's your portable computer. You can plug it into the laptop when you're on the road. You can plug it into the big screen when you're. It was the promise of like docking stations with laptops.
Well, and it wouldn't be bad, you know. So when I go on the road and I podcast from a hotel room or something, it's not the exact same setup as I have when I'm at home. The programs might be a little different. The camera's obviously different. But this could give me that same exact layout, desktop and screensaver even, and everything. So if I really didn't like change, I could take it with me and totally be comfortable doing it at home or away, whatever it was I was doing.
Oh, yeah. And I agree. That's one of the things that non-techies cannot stand, is when you have different interfaces working here from working there. If you can give them the exact same interface because it's the exact same computer, that can alleviate a lot of pain and agony, I'll say.
Doris, I wanted to talk about the using a mini PC like this in a work environment. I've been in a lot of companies in downtown Boston and surrounding Boston areas, and I've only come across a handful of companies that are using mini PCs, and they're not in the way that you would think they would use them. And I'm pretty shocked by that, because companies will, in a heartbeat, throw down a ton of money, you know, for Dell laptops. And I'm seeing a lot of Dell machines, a lot of Apple products. And it's a shame, because there are a lot of mini PC computers out there, or even mini ATX devices that will suffice. And I'm not seeing it.
I'm glad to say our IT guy, who was, when I had my computer shop, my competitor, but he has the account for the city, Intel NUX. He used to build our own, all of our desktops and sell them to the city. Now everything is at City Hall.
Mm-hmm. Did we lose Eric?
I don't say.
I think his Windows update got to 100%.
Oh, there he goes. Hey.
Probably. Yeah. See what's going on.
I figured your Windows update got done. Okay, I'm gonna put a link here just in our chat real quick. This is the type of mini computer, quote unquote, that we tried to implement at our job. It's called a Pano Zero client. Okay, it's at panologic.tn. The guy who started this company up used to be the head of Wyze Technologies. Wyze was basically the pioneers in the thin desktop client infrastructure for years. He left the company. He started up his own company. I don't know how good he's doing, but this device is literally a mini computer in size and form factor. Hmm. The gimmick is there's almost nothing in this computer. What it does is, via a proprietary protocol over TCP/IP, it has all the buses, all the hardware buses. So what happens is you have a VMware vSphere infrastructure with virtual desktop OSs running in it. The Pano devices connects to the vSphere interface. So when you hit the power button, it connects to it, automatically knows in configuration what desktop to connect to. You log in, and then you have your Windows desktop pop up like, quote unquote, it's a local desktop. The performance we saw out of these blew away all the Dell embedded XP thin clients, blew away all the Wyze technology thin clients. Mm-hmm. So we got this in-house, we tested it, and for the most part, it worked really good. And we bought a good amount of these things. And then a couple weeks later, we figured out, because of Microsoft licensing, none of the licenses that we already owned on our physical hardware could transverse into a virtual instance. We had to buy all new licenses, and they were literally like $200 a Windows license.
Wow.
So the Pano Zero client didn't really take off.
So you're going back to the old days where it was thin clients and a big server, kind of.
Exactly.
And then, okay, so what's your advantage over having an individual like Intel NUC on the back of each person's monitor?
Here's the big advantage. In enterprise hardware support, what that means then is the only reason a tech would ever have to come to your desk is to unhook this Pano device and give you a brand new one. Number one. Number two, you can do a deduplication on the VMware instance. And what I mean by that is you can have 500 virtual desktops in this virtual instance, but all of them can be using the exact same disk partition and data for the actual Windows installation. So when Windows updates come down, you do not have to install them on 500 different instances of that operating system and have a random percentage of them crash and not work, yeah. A random percentage of them develop bugs, a random percentage of them doing this. You can then basically have layers where you only have to update one operating system, and it updates everybody's operating system in one fell swoop. You can then also take your application and turn them into layers. So hypothetically, you want to migrate from Office 2010 to Office 2013. You don't have to install that on all the computers either. You just update that one layer in the virtual instance. So it's supposed to, in theory, take your technical staff and reduce the amount of man hours and reduce the number of people needed to perform those tasks. Unfortunately, what it means then is the person performing that task needs to be much more of an expert. So while you need less people doing it, you need better expertise in that position. Yeah. So it gives you a questionable cost savings is what I'll say. And all of a sudden this turned into This Week in Enterprise Tech, a podcast in which I despise. Because it's so boring.
It's so boring. Well, on that note, I'd like to bring to you the Azul. I think that's how you pronounce it. Azul.
There is no Zul.
There is.
Wasn't that Ghostbusters line?
There's only there Dana. No
there's only Dana. Yeah. Okay, what line is this one in the notes?
You know what? I don't think I added it. I think I shared it with my wife because...
that's not how we work here, Brian.
No, that is not how I work. I was so excited. I said, babe, you got to look at this one. line 274.
But let's just keep this between us.
I wish I had my hands on this device. This is a... they have three products. One is a thumb drive mini PC device, and two mini PCs, the Quantum and the Byte. Now, the Byte is the new arrival. Trying to get my ducks in a row here. My pages are all flopping all over the page.
Floppy
the
pages.
Yeah, what's going on here?
That sounds like a Windows thing.
No, it's my Linux machine. There we go. All right. So
that's jiggles. Not a page file. That's a swap file.
I think I got a layer 8 problem.
Oh, no.
So this is the Byte Plus fanless mini desktop PC, ranging from 169 to 189, depending on where you're getting it from and what you have inside for configuration. Now, you can choose your configuration, whether it's a 2 gig with 32 gigs of memory or 4 gig with 32 gigs of memory. But it's a quad-core 64-bit Atom Cherry Trail processor PC. And I have to say, looking at the demonstrations on how folks were using this, it comes with Windows 10, so I won't hold that against them, but it was fairly decent. It was pretty snappy. I'm not going to say you're going to be able to, you know, run all kinds of high-end video games on it, but you're going to at least be able to, you know, spin up multiple instances of Chrome, excuse me, or Firefox, depending on what's your pleasure. You're going to be able to check out YouTube. Let's see, I'm not too sure if it has 4K display or not, but you have two USB 3.0s in the back, Ethernet 10-1000, HDMI, USB 2.0 in the back, Kensington lock. It's tiny. The thing fits in the palm of your hand, you know? And it's pretty gorgeous looking.
Have you guys ever used a Kensington lock?
I have not. I figured if someone's going to take it.
Yes. Yeah. I'll say I have experience with the Kensington lock. And what I mean by that is I remember seeing a kid in, I don't know if it was middle school or the library or whatever, literally taking and just ripping the entire thing out of the wall.
Oh, man.
Like, I mean, tore the drywall out. Pulled the entire Kensington lock and the military grade uncuttable cable and just ripped it all out of the wall. I just got to say this. First off, Brian, the price hits my sweet spot. And what I mean by that is this is the kind of device I don't feel like I would have to spend hours with my wife saying to justify, you know, because a $300-$500 device.
I know.
This is a sub $200 device, number one. Number two, it physically looks appealing. This is not some military-grade, steampunk-looking, you know, bare-bones kind of thing. This is actually a pretty elegant-looking device. The quad-core 2 gigs of RAM running Windows, I can see it not running perfect or randomly interrupting you installing Windows updates. installing a alternate operating system on this, I can very easily believe being a good experience.
Yeah.
Because most of the time with these smaller boards, they're not using like NVIDIA chipsets or ATI chipsets. They're using Intel for the wireless and for the video, which most of the time means it's going to work seamless on everything. I'm definitely interested. And this is the kind of thing I'm going to have to keep in my scope. See if I can find any sales on this thing.
Yeah. And I like the idea of a little antenna that pops up. I mean, even some of the devices I have that are small like that, I wish they had an antenna popped up, even if it's just for looks, for me to feel better.
Right.
But I do like the idea that you can fold it back so that it's not like the antenna sticking up in front of the TV if that's where you have it sitting. You know, if it's just like a little box sitting there.
Very cool. And this site, we're going to have the whole site in the notes. They also have a Quantum Access fanless mini PC stick, which you can get with a Linux operating system. It looks like possibly on it by default called Nix OS Like for only $79. So that really could be the kind of quote unquote computer in your pocket. I got to say this is I love these companies that I've literally never heard of before in my life offering reasonably priced, kind of flexible choices. This is really good.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It looks like they have pretty decent customer service. You can chat with them online. Look at that. Get a hold of a customer rep right there.
Well, as long as it's not a bot, then yes.
I'm gonna follow them on Google Plus and be the ninth person to do so.
Good man.
I'm wondering, have you guys had any experience with these HDMI stick PCs?
Yes. Literally 3 years ago. Before the Intel Compute Stick was even a zygote in the Intel womb, I had a HDMI stick called had a horrible name, like XO8211B or something, running literally like Android 4.0 or something. I can't remember the name of it. And my experience was, it was like a $30 stick.
Yeah.
You got $30 worth of computing out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Wi-Fi wasn't great. Everything in Android that you clicked was literally click, one, two, three, load.
Yeah.
Click, one, two, three, load.
Sounds like my experience with the Minix Nero 5 Android TV box. The same exact thing.
Oh, yeah, here you go. MK802. Then they had the MK8021 and then the MK8022.
Oh yeah, I remember
that
those.
And that was where I stopped following this company. and it was only because I was constantly underwowed. They weren't overpriced. I mean, they just didn't do enough, fast enough for what I was looking for. And things like the Kodi plugin thing that I know of didn't exist. Netflix might not even have been available on Android yet. This is how long ago this was. So your options back in these days were definitely limited, I'll say.
Gotcha. So I'm wondering if they've come a long way since then.
I have to believe, like anything else, they've gotten better. The question is, what's the sweet spot? Is it a Odroid sized shaped computer? Mm. Is it one of these custom Android boxes off of Amazon or one of these sticks? I mean, you can't beat for portability these basically huge thumb drive-shaped compute sticks. Mm-hmm. But when you need something for experience's sake, you want the best experience, I doubt one of these would be it.
They do have kind of some support on the Azul Google Plus. You got to be a follower and invited, but how to manually install the auto run jumper on the Byte Plus. Little step-by-step how-to videos for the users. I don't know what an auto run jumper is.
Well, it makes the auto run
jumper. Maybe it boots without you having to hit the boot button or something. I don't know.
I think I'm going to have to join you on that one, Eric. I have no idea.
Hey, I can't believe I forgot about this, guys. I got in the mail, I broke down and I purchased. We, a couple of months ago, talked about the NanoPi Neo, and then it was only like an $8 computer. Then on the show live, we figured out when you go to buy it, it was like $20 shipping. And we were like, oh. So we didn't follow through with it. Well, I broke down and I found out if you buy more than one, you don't pay any more in shipping. So to convince myself the shipping wasn't overly priced, I bought three of these things. Okay, now with that said, obviously the Raspberry Pi Zero giveaway isn't happening today. Nudge, nudge. You have another week to enter. It's just because I didn't prepare before the show.
the truth comes out.
Okay. Like, I'm not going to lie.
There's no reason to lie for this.
We didn't talk about it.
But I'll say this. The NanoPi Neo running the supported Ubuntu versions... was horrible. I would boot it up via Ethernet. I would SSH in, and when I SSH'd in already, I got like a display warning on the temperature saying it was overheating.
From this view, there's not even a processor on
there
that
is.
Board.
It's on the back where I affixed this huge honking.
Oh, you had one on there.
I put a big heat sink on it because this thing was overheating like crazy. All I did was an apt-get update, apt-get upgrade, and the thing would lock up because of heat. And I literally touched it, and I thought I got a first-degree burn.
Wow.
Okay, so how hot the damn thing was. So I thought, this sucks. This is just like Joe Heck was telling me about the Banana Pi M3. This is horrible. This is stupid. And then Aaron from the Mattermost server, which, by the way, if you join the Mattermost server once in a while, you'll be able to watch this show live as we're recording it. They're the only people I send the invite to. He told me that he got one the very same day I got mine in the mail, and he said he loaded Debbie and Jesse on it, and his was updating fine. So I immediately came home, reformatted the card, loaded the official Armbian, I believe, Jesse instance on it, booted it up. I still saw a little bit of heat popping up into the red, but it never locked up. Everything worked fine. So now I can say with pretty much certainty, if you want something, I mean, really tiny with a full-size Ethernet port on it, of course, not a gigabit Ethernet port on it, a single USB port on it, a whole bunch of GPIO pins on both sides of it, you can now have yourself a teeny, teeny, tiny, tiny computer. Now, I'm starting to think this really quick, guys. There's three grades of mini computers. Just saying single board computer even is too vague. We have step one of the mini computer, which is this. Something dedicated to not be have a video output. This is not supposed to in any shape, way, or form be anything close to a desktop-like experience. This is built for the purpose to be a appliance, a network headless appliance, whether it be a server or a service. For $8, hard to beat. Then you got stage two of the mini PC. That's where you get the Raspberry Pi 3 and the Odroid C2. That's almost a desktop-like experience in mini computing systems. Then when you want to get to the big boys, you get that last computer that Brian just bought up, the Azure.
The Azure. Right.
That's a mini computer that is much closer to being a relative direct descendant of a desktop type computing experience.
Something with an Atom or Cherry Trail, like
so
that.
So for a stage one computer, mini computer, this to me is fan-freaking-tastic. I bought three of them. I'm giving at least one away on the show, but we have to first give away the Raspberry the Raspberry Pi Zero. So next week, we're giving it away. And I said it three times.
Next week. next week while Dor's driving to Ohio.
I'm driving out on Thursday. We're fine. And I did also buy three cases to go with it. So the winner will also receive a obviously 3D printed in their back garage.
It looks like a mini pet carrier.
It kind of does because it has the grating for good ventilation all around kind of thing. So they will get a NanoPi Neo plus they will get a case to go along with it. We're gonna give that away. My logic is hopefully third week in October.
Nice, great breakdown, Dor. Thank you for that.
Well, and the real reason I brought it up was because there's a new NanoPi board from line 271 on the notes. Aaron, I believe, was the one who brought this to Google Plus to my attention. Friendly Arm is the company behind these NanoPis. Friendly Arm is a Korean-based, China-based manufacturer. All of their OS and all of their stuff is available at github.com/friendlyarm, which I think is almost ironic. Most Asian companies seem to now be completely on board the open source, where they're putting all their code up. But Friendly Arm is coming out with a new NanoPi Neo Air board with built-in Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and no Ethernet. So it's even smaller than this board. They basically took off the full-size USB port, they took off the Ethernet port, and they put on a DVP camera port. They put on the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth module. And it has the eMMC of 8 gig built into the board, and you can use your micro SD card. This, if this is not the definition, you flip through Webster's and you look up the definition for sexy computing device, this thing is ridiculous. It's literally about the size of a postage stamp. I mean, a big postage stamp, but it's literally like the size of a postage stamp. And you have 512 megs of DDR3 RAM. You got a all-winter quad-core 1.2 gigahertz processor. You have a MAUI 400 MP2 GPU up to 600 megahertz on the GPU.
Wow.
This is crazy. This is cool, but this is crazy. So now I'm going to have to buy at least one of them.
Where'd you find the heatsink that you put on that?
I just purchased random Raspberry Pi heatsinks. And honestly, I don't want to put heatsink on anything ever again. I didn't have a choice. This thing was literally burning my finger, and it was locking up, so I had to do something. Putting this...
Is it held on just with the silver?
No, it had a sticky already built right into it. I just peeled it off, stuck it on.
So did that do the trick?
Hell no.
Oh, man.
Hell no. With the two versions of Ubuntu I ran, the Armbian and their... I literally was blowing on it. As I was doing the upgrade, the damn thing still locked up. So, no. But when I ran the Debian, it works just fine. Now I'm almost afraid to take it off because I'm sure there's going to be some residue left on the process, and I don't want to do that.
I built a cage and had a 12-millimeter case fan sitting on
top. Yeah. So I'll say this. If the idea of the NanoPi that we brought a couple weeks ago at all sparked your interest, I'm going to tell you right now, hold tight. Hold tight. Don't move. Ask yourself in France, what do they call the quarter pounder? Wait a couple weeks. And then take a look at the NanoPi Neo Air.
Oh, man.
Because this thing to me, I really hate using the word. I really do hate using the word. But this to me is downright sexy. And OBS crashed on us. That's great. That's fantastic. That's just what we needed. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think that's really cool hardware, and I'm really looking forward to it actually, you know, coming out and being real.
No, I fully agree. What applications are you thinking about using these devices for, Dor?
Well, first and foremost, I have to get, realistically, I keep telling myself I have to get a 3D printer.
Yeah.
Because to really utilize these things correctly, you're going to need custom enclosures. Mm-hmm. You don't want stuff just hanging out. You don't want to use a half a roll of duct tape or electrical tape holding everything together. I'm honestly thinking about doing my own custom IPTV closed circuit webcams, at least pointing out windows and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I'm really, really tempted to do. I'm always tempted to do the atypical garage door replacement thing. We don't park in the garage, so I really don't know what the hell the point of doing that is. There really isn't much more above or beyond that I could do, except for having a sensor like on the washer or dryer picking up the vibrations, telling me when it's done, because I can't hear either of them when I'm off this floor.
Or if there's water.
A water sensor wouldn't be nice, but I'll say this. I'm not going to get flooded from the outside. Baltimore City would have to be 30 feet underwater for it to be approaching my steps. So in that sense, I'm good, but definitely the hot water heater could leak or the washing machine could leak. It's definitely plausible. So I could do a humidity moisture sensor kind of thing. I've definitely looked at that. But also, with the 3D printer, you can then use Octopi and have a mini computer controlling the 3D printer and have it accessible from the public-facing internet to view the camera looking at the printer to see what it's doing, what's the performance, what's the progress, did it mess up, should I stop the printer kind of thing. Except for that, there's really not much more I could think. I always think about doing the magic mirror kind of thing, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it's actual usefulness.
I gotcha. I had ADT out a few months ago, a couple of months ago, and I wanted to get a sensor put in my shed. Now, my shed is about 50 yards away from the house, so I'd like to know if the door is being open and closed, or trying to be open and closed when I'm not around. And he's like, well, if I do that during the wintertime, the sensor is going to trip automatically while the alarm is set, and it's going to cause a false alarm. So I've dealt with it many times before. You don't want to do that. So I'm like, well, there has to be a way. There has to be an easier way.
So what kind of sensor was it? Was it a light sensor?
It's a magnetic strip sensor. So if I said to him, if I run, because the wireless wouldn't reach because it's too far away. So if I ran a hard line and a conduit with a magnetic sensor, it should be able to work. And he's like, well, they tend to not do well in the cold weather. I didn't do a whole lot of research on it. I figured, okay, he might be right. You know, I'm obviously he's been doing this a lot longer than I have, so I'm going to take his word for it. But then again, trust but verify, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I live in a cold climate, and we have like a laser eye sensor on every garage door.
Ah.
So you could, you know, I was thinking, you know, just use that kind of break the light beam kind of thing for.
Didn't think about that. That's a good idea. Lasers.
Everything's better with lasers, period.
So, not mini PC show, but kind of, you know, I got that mini projector in the mail not too long ago. Yeah. I don't know if I talked about it on the show or not. So I'm thinking about maybe hooking that up to some kind of a mini PC or old laptop or something outside for making a spooky Halloween display.
That would be awesome.
On the garage or something. So I haven't really found much use for it. It's not the greatest resolution or brightness for indoor use. So something in the dark outside at night might be all right.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually.
Gotcha. Real quick question, guys. Did I ever bring Node Red to this show?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, then that might be next week. Well, I'll bring this one instead. Line 271 in the notes, sorry. Nick, the last known god, was the guy that told me about this one. I don't know how I didn't hear about this, but I didn't. This is called Home Assistant, and it's at home-assistant.io. On the main page, they show you a phone and a phone interface. Mm-hmm. It's just the interface to the application. You can do this on a desktop browser too, but you can basically install this back-end service on a computer in your house, and this goal is to be your home Internet of Things hub interface. This will be the thing that can connect your phone to your garage door opener, your phone to your home alarm system. And I say, and this is what made me think of it, Brian, because Richard Hughes downloaded this, and in 20 minutes, he had this connected to his home security system.
This is nice.
You can hook it up to your lights, hook it up to your stereo, hook it up to, you know, whatever. And this is where you can literally, in one interface, this is the promise, turn on or off your device or set kind of if this, then that kind of things, where if this temperature monitor gets below 58, turn the heater on in the garage or, you know, kind of stuff. I have not had a chance to play with this at all. Richard Hughes has. There's a good chance he's going to be at OLF, so I'm going to sit down with him and talk to him about this, about his personal experiences on how this works or doesn't work, or what, you know, like what it needs to become that final solution, because I do believe this is pretty new.
You know, the beauty of this is you don't need to go over the internet in order to control your house.
Yeah.
That's it's like an ad hoc network in a sense, you know? That this is really nice. Or have a service that's outside the internet controlling your home.
Well, yeah, and all you got to do is open up the port on the firewall, and voila, you can control your home lights from Spain if you want. This it basically is able to be installed on Windows 10 as a server, Mac OS X, or Ubuntu 14.04. So it is, like, quote-unquote, truly cross-platform, home Internet of Things hub. And I will say, if you're at all a fan of Security Now, Steve Gibson, or security-minded people, they are in full-blown panic mode. The sky is falling because of the Internet of Things insecurities. Mm-hmm. The only way to take insecurity out of the equation, there's only two solutions. One is companies become responsible, companies become mature, companies act like this is a serious issue, companies offer frequent updates, companies offer, you know, constant upkeep, companies offer you the ability to do this upkeep, or you just simply own the device and you administrate it. So there's no doubt running a system like this, you will have the availability to know more about this system and be more secure, but you're going to become a administrator. So, you know, there is no perfect solution. There is no one pill to lose all your weight. It's going to take work. So if you want to do Internet of Things type things, you know, this is a way you can do it. And it has connectivity to, deep breath, Amazon Echo, our Arduino, Belkin, Wemo, Forecast IO, Foursquare, Google Cast, If This Then That, Kodi, MQTT, My Sensors, Nest, Own Tracks, Philips Hue, Plex, Push Notifications via HTML, Push Bullet, Sonos, Wink, Z-Wave, and Echobee. That's some of the bigger names in and around Internet home automation and Internet of Things. So they already have a lot of support. So that's pretty cool.
That's something that I like about it, too. You don't have to go all in with one brand because you don't know if that brand's going to stick it out and be there in the long haul. You can mix and match as you feel comfortable, depending on each thing you want to add to your system
right.
in your house.
Yeah, and it actually supports 407 different types of things, from Acer and Asus hardware, like Asus WRT routers, AWS services, BT, British Telecom Home Hub connectivity, on and on, DirecTV, Edimax, decent company, Equoline, Fast.com, the speed testing service, on and on and on and on. This is really cool.
Yeah.
So I definitely, Nick doesn't listen to any podcasts. He's never going to listen to this, but thank you, Nick. This is really cool.
Hopefully, when Google Home comes out real soon, it'll be one of these listed here, too.
Okay.
Well, they have.
Are you holding your breath?
Am I holding my breath that they'll be open enough to let it go here? Or am I holding my breath that it's actually coming?
That it's actually coming?
I want it to come.
Oh, who doesn't?
I think it will.
Yeah, if they're smart enough.
But they gotta make it better than Amazon to make it, you know, to make it succeed, I think, because that would be like everybody I talk to who has the Echo is happy with that. So if they need to, there has to be a killer app or a killer feature that outshines the Echo. And they got the bar's set a little high for them, I think.
Yeah.
Well, in recent history, at least, again, Google is late to the game. They're going to have to go way above, way beyond, be way better, like you said. They're going to have to be like 200% better. Mm-hmm. Google Duo came out after FaceTime, after Skype, after all these other solutions already came out. I don't see people adopting that. Google Allo just came out after what, Hangouts is only 4 years old and they're basically killing it, and everybody else already has stuff. Facebook Messenger, you know, all these other solutions exist. I don't see that taking big, huge upticks. In the home automation, the hub type front, the Amazon Echo is doing a lot of stuff, and they have an open architecture. Anybody can write a thing towards it. It's not hard. You just file to be a developer. They give you your code, and away you go.
Well, here's where Google sets themselves apart, and I know this is kind of taking a turn a little bit from the Mini PC show, but they've got the best AI system on the planet so far. You know, aside from IBM, I can't remember their AI system that they have, but aside from that, I mean, Google's it. You know, it's beating everyone hands down. I mean, you ask Alexa a question that you would ask the Google AI question, and you're going to get dramatically different results. So, and I think they're transforming their Google Now platform into their Google Assist. It seems that what it looks like, and it's kind of a little brand new. It's got a lot of they've got a lot of work ahead of themselves, and I'm hoping this Google Assist will take off with their upcoming box that Eric mentioned, the Google Home platform.
Well, I'll say yes and no. The supposed plans are they're fragmenting, if you will, Google Now, with the eventual goal of just killing it outright. Like if you download Google Trips,
right,
that takes that bit of functionality into its own application, making it more modular, dare I say. The Google Assistant is going to be the kind of thing where you can ask local, where's the local restaurants at, what's 15 plus 5 kind of questions. But as long as I have Google Now, at least available to me, I have zero reason to use that other application. I really despise the fact that it's connected to your phone number, and I really despise the fact that I can't access it on my computer. To me, that is literally, you have a perfectly good table, and for some reason, you cut two of the legs off.
Yep. And Google Now works so well.
It does.
It works really well. Anytime I have a question on anything, I just say, okay, something. I'm not going to do it because I just mess with people. And usually two or three answers come flying from different rooms or areas around me. And it's like the more Android devices I have around my house, it's almost like having an Amazon Echo because there's always a bunch of them listening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on the way home today, I said, okay, Hercules, or whatever you want to call it, what's the diet for diverticulitis? And I can't even say the damn thing right, okay? And it knew what I was talking about, and it told me what foods to avoid because I have a family member who has diverticulitis, and I got to know what they can't eat because if we're going to invite them to Thanksgiving dinner, I got to make sure I don't put something on right in front of them as the centerpiece of this meal that they can't eat.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the one thing about Google Now. If people, you don't know, literally, this is like the Easter egg operating system. Hit the button every now and then and just ask it random questions. You will be pleasantly shocked when it comes back and knew exactly what you were talking about and tells you the exact information you were needing.
Man, preach it.
I am still scrolling through all these modules, connectivity options for Home Assistant. It's freaking crazy.
Yeah, I've got these grandiose visions of things I would like to do, and this may get me closer to actually getting something done, knowing that there's something like this on the back end for myself.
Yeah. You were talking about Steve Gimson and all the Internet of Things causing issues with security. It made me think of the quote from the Battlestar Galactica's captain, not the original, the second generation series, where he says, don't you have any computers on board of the ship? It's like, oh, we have a ton of computers on board the ship, but they're not networked.
Oh, God.
You know, so if they ever networked anything on that ship, then the Cylons would easily just take it over. They would hack right through it, no problems. And you can have a house that is wired for the Internet of Things, but everything doesn't have to be networked, you know?
Right.
So that's my stick on that.
Air-gapped. You can have them air-gapped.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, this is really cool.
With a check, got a check flow valve, then that way you don't have to worry about it.
I mean, all this stuff is really cool. I'm really honestly excited to see where it goes, but I said this, I think, the other night on one of my shows. I already have the most advanced home automation system ever created. It, you know, all I got to do is say out loud, pick up the clothes, turn the TV off, turn the light on, close the door, and my kids or wife will end up doing it. The only problem is that Internet of Things connectivity is a really high maintenance application, and it uses up a lot of energy And it it just requires constant upkeep, but it is the most advanced system we have out there. This is why to have a home automation system to like turn off lights, to me being a father, I don't see the logic in why I would do that. I'll just turn it to, hey, Billy, turn the light off. I mean, that's a lot quicker than opening up my phone saying, turn the light off. I mean,
well, it's the remote part. So, I mean, you got the intercom system built in your house then?
Yeah. And he has the phone. Okay. I'll just hit him up on Voxer.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, I'm not above bribing my kids. So my kid knows when they do. I've ingrained, I mean, literally, I mean, almost like brainwashing. Like I've read Nazi handbooks on brainwashing where my kids understand the line, good kids get good stuff. And they know when they do good, when they behave good, when they say please and thank you, they will get rewarded one way or another. So, yeah, I mean, this is why a large majority of the Internet of Things use cases, I don't want to say I find pointless or useless, but the ends don't justify the means. There's not enough reward. Now, if I was a single man living on my own, I'd have everything connected. I'd have everything on timers, motion sensors. I come into a room, the light turns off, there's no motion. For X amount of time, the lights turn off. I'd have all kinds of stuff going on.
I'd have LED recipes coming up through my veneer countertop.
Now, that would be awesome. Now, I got to get some of those motion lights for the sensors for our house. Yeah, the darn kids keep leaving the lights on everywhere you go. It just drives me crazy.
Right. Well, and I got this. Speaking of Steve Gibson, I believe we're approaching 2 hours now on the show. So I'll ask you guys, is there anything else you guys wanted to bring up or talk about or tease for the next episode?
Well, I just ordered another Android box that's going to be coming in the next couple of days. So whatever.
Nice. How about maybe we'll tease the giveaway. We actually may give something
the
away.
The plan is to give something away.
Ooh.
And unfortunately, as I explained to my son, I like tricked him one time. Because he was telling me how smart his teacher was and how his teacher knew everything. I said, really? Your teacher knows everything? He said, yes, knows more than you. I said, then go into school and ask your teacher, do time machines exist? Can we travel through time? He went into school. He asked the teacher, came back the next day. The teacher said, no, there's no such thing as a time machine. And no, you can't travel through time. I said, well, here's how your teacher's wrong. I said, your body is a time traveling machine. You're right now traveling through time. The only catch is you're moving through time forward at 1 second per every second. And you can't travel backwards in time and you can't travel any forwards through time any faster. We are time machines. Go tell your teacher that. So I don't have a time machine that can go any faster. I can't see into the future. But the plan is to give something away next week. But I'm not going to know until next week. But the plan is to give something away next week.
Yeah. Okay. I want to give a shout out to the people in the Google Plus community and on the Mattermost community and people who, you know, help us out and talk back and forth with us. I love it. Give a shout out to Richard Quirin and Bill and all the guys who give us content. Richard just made up some Dini Media logos for me, so I appreciate that. And I got a cardboard going out to him for helping me out there. I've got a door syndrome coming on, though. I'm having a hard time getting over to the post office with this thing. It's in the package. It's taped up.
I'm not the only one. And I'll say this publicly. I'm almost tempted to offer Bill Miller a show. He posts so much content in the Android Plus community, in the Mini PC community, in the Panos community, and virtually all of it is really good stuff. You know what I mean? Everyone once in a while is going to post a stinker. Once in a while, I post a stinker. It happens to the best of us. But the most of the stuff he posts is really good stuff, and I'm halfway tempted to ask him to do a show based upon his content alone. Literally, all he would have to do is just look at the link, tell the link, say what he thinks about the link, for 2 minutes, move on to the next link, and that's an hour a week he posts so much stuff.
Yeah, so I thank all those guys.
I gotta agree.
For being a part of it. Well, if that's all, Brian, do you have anything else before we go?
Looking pretty good over on this side.
Okay, well, thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next week with possibly a giveaway.